a lesson in clock management, we're going to make sure and guarantee that you'll always get better than a 64-yard attempt at the gun, and you have all your timeouts to spare on this show. Monday Night Football, Elite Eight, next. This episode of the Educated Ignorance Podcast is brought to you by the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Subscribe to the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network on your favorite podcast platform for the newest episodes of The Data Lab with Professor John Bush and Dennis Mickelson, as well as new episodes every week of Card Subject to Change, our new wrestling podcast with CZ and Nick. And three times a week, releasing episodes on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, the Educated Ignorance Podcast. On Mondays, you will get full breakdowns of the Sunday night football game, as well as a couple quick-hitting topics from some of the NFL action on Sunday. Tuesday will be a quick-hitting reaction of the Monday night football game, as well as a full slate review of the Sunday games, the biggest and broadest topics from the weekend of football, as well as some college football stuff. And, of course, that Tuesday will be the Elite Eight episode each week for the NFL season, where we reveal the top eight teams, according to myself, in the NFL. And then on Friday, we will be releasing each week a big kind of preview for the weekend's games coming up, as well as the Sinister Six podcast every week with Mac Fulton. He will be joining us every week for the Sinister Six, a joint venture of NFL games and college games throughout the year. Our best six picks of the weeks. So we will also have some betting stuff in there as well, against the spread, over-unders, things like that. So stay tuned for those three episodes a week of the Educated Ignorance Podcast here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Back to back, like we're on the cover of Lethal Weapon or whatever that saying is. Monday, recording this Monday night, Elite Eight pod. We'll have the top eight teams in the NFL. We'll do a college football weekend roundup, and we're going to talk about that weird, very strange Monday Night Football game between Denver and Seattle. But hey, at the end of the day, it was extremely entertaining, so I will take it. And as always, you know what to do. Like, share, follow the podcast wherever you're, on whatever platform, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, Google Play, etc., etc., etc. Ask Alexa to play the Educated Ignorance Podcast. This and our latest episode will pull up all of the hits. And I always challenge people to tell one friend that if they believe would enjoy this show. You know, I think we do a great job here in the Quad Cities of, you know, media, and we got a lot of great people around here that, you know, enjoy, you know, making content. And I think a lot of people that listen to this are Quad City based or were born there. So tell some friends to support a bunch of QC bread guys, myself, DJ, Doug, a lot of the guys, even not QC, but around the central part of the state. For some of our other podcasts, we're doing a lot of great stuff here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network, and we'd really appreciate the support. So if you are a first-time listener, welcome. If you are a dedicated listener, you already know this is going to be a hit. So as always, buckle up. Let's get it on. This is the Educated Ignorance Podcast here on the FFSQC Podcast Network. So just got done watching the Broncos-Seahawks cluster, you know what, of a Monday Night Football game, and there's so many things that I can talk about, and I want to start with this. So we're going to get to the Seahawks stuff, and they deserve some credit here because it was a gutsy performance, and I thought they did a lot of things that were positive. It doesn't change my opinion on them as a whole because I think they were able to do some stuff defensively that I don't think they have the guys to do that on a weekly basis. In week one, things look better than it might seem. let's start. I want to start with the Russ issue, and this is what I was worried about. The narrative of him the last few years, when you think of the issues, he only likes to when he's throwing the ball, he avoids the middle of the field. He's only throwing those deep lob fades down the sideline. He holds onto the ball too much. Like, he gets sacked a lot, but when you really look at the tape, a lot of his sacks are him holding the ball too much, trying to make crazy plays, and he gets burned for it. Now, he didn't get sacked. I think he might only got sacked once or twice tonight. And the holding the ball thing wasn't really that bad. But the issues with him were still as egregious as ever. He still, for some reason, vacates the entire middle of the field. Anything inside the numbers, he just doesn't ever look for. Everything is loft passes down the sidelines or checkdowns. And it just it makes it easy for the defense to get momentum and to be able to it just makes your offense easy to defend. And I thought the Broncos were creative in how they used Javonte Williams tonight and how they asserted touches with him and Melvin Gordon. I believe there are ways, though, that they can get guys like Judy and Sutton involved more. But the problem is Russ is going to have to, like, they're going to have to do stuff to draw out of their norm, of the norms that Russ likes. And it was so interesting to see that. And then you look at the Seahawks tonight, and all of the talk over the years is talking about the Russ Cook thing and Wuda. And here's the thing. I thought coming into the season, people that were, like, saying all this stuff about Russ is like, listen, he's a guy that he has his flaws, but he's still a really good quarterback, high-level guy. But, you know, I didn't think this team could be a Super Bowl contender, like, obviously the Bucs when they got Brady, obviously the Rams last year when they got Stafford. But I had a feeling this team will be pretty good, and there's still a really good chance they will be. They have a lot of good players. And though the problem is they have to figure stuff out. Like, they have to weed through some stuff that we're going to get to, especially when you play the division that you're in and the schedule that they have, especially the second half of the season. Their schedule is ridiculous. But this team, you know, a lot of people were just kind of wanting to stick it to Russ, and I was like, I don't know. I feel like this could be a good night for them, and I was really open for anything, but it was just brutal. And you look on the other side for Seattle. Tonight was so weird because I haven't seen Seattle do what they did tonight in a long time. And Geno Smith has flaws. Geno Smith is, I saw someone on Twitter say it, and I think it's great. He is a good thrower of the football, but not a great passer. He can throw a good ball. His arm talent is solid, but he's not a good passer. He doesn't make great decisions. His touch isn't there. He can't put the ball in the right spot at times. Tonight, I thought he was really dialed in, and I'm really happy for him. I'm not going to lie. The genuine joy on his face after the game and the conversation, like when Salters asked him after the game, she said, people wrote you off. What do you got to say to them? And he said, I ain't wrote back. My man, that is tip of the cap. Beautiful stuff. Chef's kiss. I'm so happy for Gino. I really am. Like, I was getting emotional there watching that interview because he was just, you could just tell, like, at the end of the day, the reason that he went from a starter to where he has been over the last 8 years now, this is his first opening day start in 8 years since he was on the Jets back in, I guess what, 2014. There was a reason for that, that he was a turnover machine, very inconsistent. But obviously a good enough dude in a locker room and a good enough guy that he can be a backup. And if, you know, in case of a rainy, he's like a rainy day bank account for a quarterback room because he's a serviceable backup QB. I don't think he's one of the 32 best QBs in the world, but I was really, really happy for him to have this moment. And he obviously was really excited for it. And again, you could just see the genuine emotion in his face during that post-game show. Now, the thing for me, or that post-game interview, the thing that was so impressive for me with the Seahawks, I say all that to get to this. Gino was dialed in, yes, but they were doing stuff, drawing up easy completion after completion after completion for him. He hit his first 13 passes. I think he went like 21 for 25. Like, they were drawing stuff up for him, whether it was quick smoke screens to DK to let him. Now, look, you have there's some stuff you have to do to negate the Broncos' pass rush, which they did. Bradley Chubb, until the last two possessions, was invisible. Randy Gregory, the entire game, all possessions, was invisible. They negated the pass rush with their play calling. Also, they have a really good secondary. Jonathan Simmons, Bradley Roby at corner. Simmons, one of the, I think, maybe the most underrated player in the league, top-tier safety. And Patrick Surtain, who is an absolute dude at the other corner position. Surtain was following DK all over the field. What are ways to negate, you know, tight coverage windows? Throwing easy balls, play-action rollouts to make the... I said this yesterday. When your offense can make the defense defend the entire width of the field, the entire 52 yards wide of the field, that is when you are dangerous, because you can get run game going. You can get counter run game going. You can get sweeps and tosses going, and that's then misdirection, and that's when you can get play action and bootleg, all different things. It's why people have, over the last half decade, the NFL is a sports in general are copycat, but the NFL, one of the biggest things, like the biggest propriety of it, is the NFL. I always say is a copycat league. The McVay-Shanahan stuff is all about motion, misdirection, making the defense go one way and you come the other way. And the Seahawks did a fantastic job in this game of making Geno's life easy with perfectly designed play calls to get him easy throws to open guys on target and be able to move the chains and get balls downfield. They weren't pushing the ball downfield like crazy, but what they were doing was making the Broncos' strengths inadequate because they were taking those away, negating pass rush, negating really good safety play by using the middle of the field, the secondary routes, depth routes, crossers, intermediates, to negate those deep passes and to be able to move in the pocket to negate the pass rush. Impressive stuff. 23 for 28 from Geno. Like, was it a bunch of fantastic A1 quality throws? No, but it was some really good play calling and play design that a lot of, like, that was what I was so high on the Vikings yesterday talking in the pod was their offense. Like, Justin Jefferson, a lot of these deep crossers he's running yesterday, he's wide open, and there's no reason that one of the best receivers in the league should be that wide open, but play design makes those types of things happen, and Geno tonight with the Seahawks, we saw that. I also want to shout out Charles Cross. He did get beat late a few times. Their offensive tackle rookie from Mississippi State. But he did a really good job tonight on Bradley Chubb, and I think that definitely should not go unnoticed. But Seahawks offense all around, I thought their play calling tonight was super. Now let's get into the Denver red zone issues. There were a lot of them. Here is some of the stuff that I noticed. First, let's first actually talk about the mistakes. The second half, they moved the ball at will and scored 3 points. They were 0 for 4 in the red zone, ended up with two field goals. Some of their issues, multiple false starts, they had a delay of game. Those things put them behind the sticks. They had a false start on a play where they had a shovel pass perfectly drew up. Would have been a touchdown, would have gave them the lead. I think that was the drive they kicked the 17-16 field goal. Instead, that would have gave them the lead and obviously, more or less, potentially, gave them the win if all things would have stood, which, you know, Seahawks might have been different, whatever. But the things, other than the mistakes, which are fixable, some of the stuff that I do feel is not, but they... I think over time that they're going to really have to work on. So Seattle's defense, so once they made mistakes and it was goal to go from the 7-8 yard line, Seattle's defense basically was just playing 8-10 yards off the ball because their all Russ again wants to do is throw these deep shots and doesn't want to utilize the middle of the field. Not running any crossers. They're just running deep balls to the outside the numbers. And some of the talk tonight with some of the guys we were chatting was talking about Jeudy and Sutton winning their one-on-ones. It's hard because they're not playing press man. They're playing base. They're almost playing quarters coverage, just daring them to use the middle of the field. But there's I cannot wait to see all 22 shots of the offense for the Broncos tonight, because I bet it's going to be a bunch of plays where inside the numbers, it's wide open. Like, there was nothing there on these plays. Like, even when some stuff would break down, you'd see guys get open out the numbers, and there's just green grass near the hashes. It's just crazy, the issues with this offense. The teams are just going to do that. You're not going to get these one-on-ones against Jeudy and Sutton because teams are just going to back off and dare them to try to take underneath stuff in the middle of the field. Now, Russ is good at hitting checkdowns. He used that a lot tonight, but he's got two really good receivers, man, in Jerry Jeudy and Courtland Sutton, and they barely got targets tonight because the ineptness, what if that's a word, of their ability to call plays to get them, you know, crossing routes, deep third, deep middle third plays, seam routes, you know, stuff like that just wasn't in the playbook. Like, can we draw mesh? Can we draw mesh, Denver? Like, can we do stuff like that? I think they actually might have ran it one time, and they hit the wheel route on their opening drive to the fullback, the H-back, Beck, and he made that one-handed catch. So, like, even then, Russ isn't even looking. He's looking at the wheel. He's not even looking at the crossers and the sit. So, it's fascinating, man. Like, I don't get it with him, and I don't get it with how he plays, but that's how he is. So, lastly on this game, we'll talk about the clock management. That was atrocious by Nathaniel Hackett. And so, for those that didn't watch, Broncos got the ball back with about 4.5 to go. They had a 3rd-and-5 from their own about 30-ish. They hit Alberto underneath, and Alberto does a great job to high-level effort play to pick up the first down. Then they get another first down at about the 46, 47 in their own side of the field, about a minute 40 to go. Clock's ticking. They lose 4 yards. Clock's still ticking. Second down incomplete. Third down, Javonte Williams does a really good job. Russ wanted to go deep, doesn't get it. Immediately hits a check down. Javonte Williams does a guy, picks up 9 to make it 4th-and-5. A minute left. Clock's ticking. 50 seconds left. Clock's still ticking. 40. Nate, what are you doing, bud? Clock's still ticking. 4th-and-5. Under 30, 10 seconds left on the play clock. Clock's still ticking. 20, 1 second on the play clock, they called timeout. I have no words for how they handled this. It's baffling. Instead of trying to continue to pick up yards, instead of burning a timeout right when Williams goes down on 4th-and-5 with about a minute to go, or even, listen, here's the thing. Even if you go quick, you don't use the timeouts, and you don't get it, it's a long shot, but you can get a 3-and-out, use your 3 timeouts, and you would still have the chance to go the length of the field with about 30 seconds left to try to get in the field goal range. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's just so mind-boggling to me. So what they do, instead calling a timeout and trying to run a play on 4th-and-5, what do? They let 30 seconds run out, 40 seconds run off the play clock, call a timeout right before it expires, and they settle for a 64-yard field goal. What in God's fucking name was he doing? It is one of the worst decisions I've ever seen. Here's the crazy part. McManus almost bailed his dumb ass out because he just missed it. They lined up the first one. I for a second I thought, okay, he took him out there to make Seattle burn a timeout, and he's probably thinking, I know McManus can hit from 55 at least. He's probably thinking, I don't need the time, I can burn it, we'll pick up this first down, we'll call timeout, we'll use a couple more plays to get closer. Any McManus anywhere, weather was perfect all night. Anytime, anywhere we get McManus from 55 in, we should be good. He's got one of the, he's probably the third best kicker in the league behind Tucker and McPherson. And he's easily got the strongest leg out of all of them, I would say. McPherson and Tucker, just, it just feels like they never miss. Unless, unless you're the Bengals and your long snapper gets hurt. So, I thought, you know, that I even like that, even it would have been dumb though, that idea where it's like, all right, we burned all this time to bring him out here and then have Seattle burn a timeout for whatever reason. I don't know. Like, it makes no sense, but I'm just trying to rationalize here. McManus got the chance to practice one kick. He missed the entire net, but he had the leg, plenty of leg. So I was like, all right, he lines this up, he's got a shot. It was plenty deep. Like, it would have been good from, like, 70. And he just missed it. Slid. It was on the left hash, so left upright. It slid. Just. He just pulled it just a little bit. Slid past the outside of the left post. Tough. But the Broncos, I don't feel bad for him because they don't deserve it. They didn't deserve it. With how they handled the end of that game. It's mind-boggling. And then, the worst part is, when the Seahawks are kneeing the clock out, then Hackett calls the timeouts. Fucking disgrace. Disgraceful. He should have gotten kicked in the dick for that. I don't know if any jamoke that has a press pass for the Broncos or the Seahawks asked him, hey, so you didn't call a timeout to give yourself a chance to pick up more yards to make the kick easy, but you sure as heck used some irrelevant timeouts when the Seahawks were burning the clock. I wonder if anybody asked that question. And then Nathaniel Hackett would have had to be like, well, one of those generic coach answers. Well, you know, something about looking at the tape and the game sheet said timeouts and game sheet said, you know, when you got the chance to pick up a first down or try a 64-yard field goal, you just got to go ahead and kick a 64-yard field goal. You know what I'm saying? So we'll look at the tape and look at the tape of the tape and hope that next week, put it on me, though. You know, we got to do better at executing. Something like that. Coach speak. Just so dumb, man. Oh, that was that pissed me off. I'm like, what the hell? Imagine, oh, God. Actually, it wouldn't matter. We all talked about, like, for bets this weekend, the big teases would have, like, the six-point teases would have been Bengals to a half point, Chiefs to a pick'em. I think this game would have ended up getting down to a pick'em or a half point. So basically, to win a parlay, you just would have needed the Chiefs, Broncos, and Bengals to win. Wouldn't have mattered because the Bengals lost on Sunday. One of the dumbest games ever. But could you imagine someone that their weekend was riding on this game and you did something to actually have? Like, if you did some other kind of tease, like, say you did something with the Texans, maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying that was brutal, just tough, big tough. Anywho, let's take a break. We'll come back. Love the college football weekend roundup next. Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter. or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com. For Fantasy's Sake has teamed up with Route 96 Boutique to raise a little more cash for Toys for Tots this season. From September 11th until the end of November, 10% off of all purchases made with Route 96 on Sundays will be donated to us for our Toys for Tots drive. At Route 96, they believe in girl power. They want a place that people of all shapes and sizes can shop and feel empowered and beautiful. They want you to be the best you possible, and they are committed to bringing you different styles while also providing some basics to express the true you. You can find them on Facebook and at Route96Boutique.com. Again, that's Route96Boutique.com. Saturday was sure as shit fun. Let's start with Bama, Texas. That game was fascinating for, I don't even say all the wrong reasons. Couple quick notes. Man, I feel bad for Quinn Ewers. We'll get to him in a second. And the thing I want to start with, though, I am sorry there was like a month and a half stretch where I was out on this kid at the beginning of last year. Because boy, oh boy, is number 9 for Alabama pretty good. That kid is a superstar. Bryce Young. He is, without a shadow of a doubt, like, the stuff he does, man, he is one of the 32 best quarterbacks on earth. He could easily be on an NFL roster playing football right now. He just has so much command and so much ability to take any situation, no matter what, against whoever, in any environment, and find ways to win. I was so impressed with how he handled Saturday. Listen, was it pretty? Absolutely not. Let's talk about all the things that went against him. First, offensive line ain't blocking all day for you. Credit Texas's defense. They were sensational. And for a Texas defense, I think sensational is being almost disrespectful, because they were amazing. Their front four was getting after it. They were schematically doing things defensively to make Alabama's offense work. Here is some factoids for you folks. They have, I want to be nice, they ain't got NFL dudes on that offense outside of Bryce and Jahmyr Gibbs. And Jahmyr Gibbs caught a bunch of passes. Other than that long run that they just hit on their second drive, like, it was a whole lot of nothing, folks, outside of Bryce Young being a freaking superhero. Bryce Young made play after play to just let Alabama survive and have opportunities. Like, the plays he was making, man, like, even some of the stuff he was doing to get free and to throw the ball downfield to guys and they just weren't making plays was ridiculous. This is going to be an issue for them all year, though. Their O-line isn't great. They can kind of run the ball, but it's not the best. Like, I really thought in this game they were going to be able to just bully ball Texas on the ground. And again, shout out to Texas's defense, man. They got some dudes and they played really, really good. We're going to get to them as a whole in a second. But against some SEC teams, man, like, here's one thing. If Georgia and Bama lined up today, I'm taking Georgia. I would not have said that about a month ago. 3 weeks, 2 weeks ago even. Georgia's really good still. And Bama just doesn't have the dudes to handle that right now. In 4 months, who knows? But right now, I would take Georgia on a neutral field. But yeah, they don't have receivers that separate. They got some guys like Corey Brooks, that Prentice dude, number 80, I believe, the slot guy. Like, those are some talented guys, but it's just not enough. And this was the issue, like, in the national title game. Bryce Young is doing so many things, but he's running around like crazy, and all of his receivers are hurt. Listen, you're going to have those situations. But at the end of the day, this is why age-old adage of people say, like, oh, wide receivers and skill players don't matter. Brother, in 2022, you got to have them or you ain't got shit. You obviously need the quarterback. But boy, oh boy, you need them dudes out there making plays too, because they got to give the opportunity for a quarterback to have a chance. And I think the O-line can figure stuff out, but man, oh man, they have just average guys at wide receiver. Now, obviously, we're comparing to the last 3-4 years. The ridiculous amount of talent that they have had go pro since 2019? Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, RIP. Who the frick am I missing? There's another guy on that team in the wide receiver room that, because they had four dudes. Waddle, Smith, Ruggs. Who else was on that team? Obviously, last year, John Metchie, Jameson Williams, Najee Harris at running back, even Brian Robinson last year at running back. Jerry Jeudy. Like, all those guys. Obviously, Bryce only played with J-Mo last year and John Metchie. But, like, those guys were game changers. So, compared to now, I don't think any of those guys are, like, high-level receivers. It ain't like the dudes, and I love C.J. Stroud, but it ain't like the dudes he's throwing to. You know what I mean? Caleb Williams is impressing me, and we're going to get to them in a moment, but it ain't like the dudes he's throwing to either. You know, some of those guys at Bama that's going to be some stuff they're going to have to figure out, and Bill O'Brien's going to have to do stuff to design some running, or some easier throws for Bryce when we get to SEC season. Another thing for Bryce Young, though, that I'm really loving, he is starting to really get comfortable taking off to run, because teams are just trying to make sure they don't get beat over the top. Now, because, again, they don't have guys that separate, but they just don't have dudes that can make plays. So, like, but they do have guys that, like, can get, like, obviously you just don't want to leave some of these guys like Burton or Brooks just running downfield open. Because then Bryce has a chance to launch it to him. But Bryce Young's doing a great job of finally being an accepting runner, and, man, that's a whole other dynamic to his game. Like Nick said it when we did the top 50 list, like anybody who talks about CJ or Bryce's mobility is an idiot, because that's not their game. And it's not going to be a thing for Bryce, but it's really good to show that he is willing and a smart runner when the opportunity is there, like he will take off to get free yards. Real quick on Texas. Man, it was sad to see Quinn Ewers go down early because he was dealing. I really think Texas is on the precipice of, oh, Texas is back, LOL, but like they're right there, man. They've got a lot of really good young players, and their offensive line, now granted, they didn't block well. I know they didn't, I just said they didn't block well, but also Bijan Robinson maybe had the worst game of his college career on Saturday. It was really, really weird. He was kind of awful. People aren't going to want to say that, but Bijan was very bad on Saturday against Bama. Hudson Card did what he could. He's just really, really limited. In a perfect world, right now Quinn's out sick 4 to 6 weeks. That's what worries me about this year's Texas team, because I feel like if Hudson Card played the rest of the season, they are at best like 6-6, because he's just very limited. Quinn Ewers could get this team to win a lot of football games. Quinn Ewers could honestly have this team flirting with a Big 12 title in a New Year's Six Bowl. They've got enough talent. And here's the thing, too. People wanted to talk about is that what they did Saturday, a game plan possibility over the year against Alabama. Listen, I thought there is not a lot of people that have – I don't think anybody has the bag outside of, like, Lincoln. Let's be real. There aren't a lot of guys. If there's anybody that I'm not thinking of, it's a short-ass list. But regardless, the list is really small that has the bag like Sark does on offense. Sark, people are going to bitch about the game management with taking field goals and blah, 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 whatever. But play design and game planning and scheming, it was honestly nearly flawless. And if I hate doing the what if wishes were fishes, the world would be an ocean, or the ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a fucking Merry Christmas type of talk when set talking about guys being hurt or not. But if Quinn played, I mean, the game's definitely got a different dynamic. Now, maybe if Quinn played, the defense, like, they did a good job. They weren't scoring, but Texas did a good job of sustaining drives. So it's not like their defense didn't have to be out there a bunch. So maybe if Quinn's out there, if they have a couple drives where they score quick, maybe the defense gets tired, but I don't know. I feel like if Quinn's out there, a couple of those red zone drives that they had end up being touchdowns, not field goals, because I just feel like Hudson, they didn't have the faith in Hudson to make some certain plays. So you already have a limited playbook on certain stuff you can do when you're trying to pick and choose what you can do against Bama's speed defensively. But offensively, when your backup quarterback is in, that playbook then becomes like finitely thin. It's really, really thin. So I could understand why they had the red zone problems. Would it have been nice maybe one or the two times where, like, at the end of the half, I didn't really mind the one at the end of the half, because at the end of the day there, they got the ball to start the third. So I was okay with just take the points and get out of there. Though, if you go into the end of the half with a touchdown and take the lead instead of tying it, or no, the field goal got blocked. So in retrospect, it's very easy to be like, oh, you know, you should have taken or you should have tried to go for it. The kick is made, you tie the game, and then you're like, holy shit, we're tied. But maybe going into the half there, it'd be better to try to go for it, because then you can take the lead going into half, and it's like, holy shit, you know? That's, again, though, kind of like a alternate reality type thinking that I don't really like when it comes to football. All right, moving on. USC. Boy, oh boy, are they smooth. All right, real quick. I guess I got to retract my original take on Caleb Williams, because I shouldn't, because here's what I said. I ranked him where I did in the top 50 before we did the combined list, because I said I need to see more. And first couple weeks, he has been dynamite. Let me tell you. Oh, boy, I'm a USC fan right now. They are smooth. Now, they have some defensive red flags, because Stanford moved the fuck out of the ball on Saturday. But credit where credit's due. USC's defense really bowed up when needed in that second half, inside the red zone, inside the 10 gold go situations, and they got some lucky turnovers and whatnot, but look, man, regardless, they got stops, and their offense is killer. They have Travis Dye at running back, who's really starting to play well. So far, the offensive line has looked really good. It'll be interesting to see as the year goes on how well that continues. As we get, you know, closer to some teams, they're going to play some teams that will be able to give them some problems up front. So it'll be interesting to see that dynamic. But yeah, Caleb is dealing. They got really good receivers in Mario Williams. He's a really good number two. Obviously, they got a high, high, high level number one in Jordan Addison. And yeah, they got killers right now. And Caleb's dealing. And boy, oh boy, I love the white top, gold bottom uniforms from USC. It is a staple. So seeing them play a road game and rocking those puppies, ooh, brings back memories as a child, hating them. And now I love them, that team of mercenaries. Lastly, I guess they're going to talk about this quickly. There's a couple teams that are some bigger brands in college ball right now. All of these teams lost, and all of them have putrid offenses. And I want to kind of go into why. Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Wisconsin, and Iowa. All four of them have similarities. Quarterbacks are very average. Now, granted, I think the Buckner kid, who, though, unfortunately, is now done for the year at Notre Dame, I think he's got some potential. And Haynes King, I just don't know. But Iowa and Wisconsin, definitely bad quarterbacks. Bad offense for them is, there's so many things. Like, schematically, it's bad. Quarterback play hasn't been good. And it's just baffling that you have teams like this that just are inept of drawing up easy plays. And the main thing here is, like, Notre Dame and A&M. struggling to move the ball, especially A&M against App State. Like, here's the thing with Jimbo Fisher. He has become very stubborn on how he wants to run his offense. He is, like Bud Elliott said it best the other day, I was listening to their pod. Like, high-level collegiate recruits, they're wide that are wide receivers, they go to A&M and kill their careers because Jimbo does not run an offense tailored to them. Look, man, here's a message to Jimbo. Listen, as a FSU fan, I'm grateful for all that you did. But here's the facts, man. You had professionals out the wazoo back in the early 2010s. Every single player that was played on that 2013 Florida State team got drafted or made an NFL roster. Bucko, you could run whatever offense you wanted, and it was probably going to work, especially when you got Jameis there. Here's the thing, man. Stuff like that ain't going to work now. They have to find ways to, like, there's no reason that A&M should lose to App State. There's no reason A&M the last 2-3 years should be, you know. Now, granted, the COVID year, I think they lost one or two games and made and won the Orange Bowl, whatever. Last year, what'd they go, 8-4? This year, they're probably going to go 8-4, best 9-3 maybe, because they're just going to back their way into dumb losses like Saturday against App State. There is no reason for that to happen. You are loaded with 4 and 5 stars. Figure it out, man. And for Notre Dame, brutal loss to Marshall. But like, say when it's like, you know, Wisconsin and Iowa, it's just inept offense. You don't have the high level players, but like, figure out how to play football in the year 2022, man. Like, it's not that hard. Draw up easy concepts for you to be able to move the ball. There's no reason for Iowa that your quarterback, even as bad as he is, should be going like 9-for-22 for 90 yards or whatever he did on Saturday. There's no reason for shit like that, man. Draw up easy plays. Draw up good schematics. Some of these coaches are just dumb, bad, or shouldn't have the job. Brian Ferentz looking dead in your eyes, you incompetent, you know what? I don't care. It's funny for me because I'm an Illinois fan, and it's going to be hilarious to beat Iowa's ass this year because they suck. They are terrible. Iowa might go 4-8. No cap. Real quick, let's pull up the schedule. Ooh, I love this. Great podcast content right here. This, I didn't have this in the rundown. On the fly projection of the Iowa Hawkeyes. My phone's loading. We're pulling it up. Big Ten standings. Where are you at, you little sideways Fred Flintstone looking thing? Iowa, 1-1. They have scored 14 points. They have given up 13. They're 1-1. They should easily be 0-2. They play Nevada this week. They're 23-point favorites. Are they going to score 23 points? Nevada's one of the worst teams in college football. Just know that. Play Rutgers after that. We'll give it to you. So you're now 3-1. Boy, oh boy, this is where it gets brutal. You play Michigan, L. Illinois on the road, I think an L. Their defense is really good. Ohio State, L. Northwestern, 50-50 game, could be an L. Purdue on the road, probably an L. Wisconsin, L. At Minnesota, probably an L. Nebraska, who knows? 5-7 is their, like, 6-6 is their ceiling. 4-8 is on the table. Boy, oh boy, it's rough to be a fan of the black and gold, isn't it? Not my problem, but I think it's hilarious. Tanner Rowe's going to love that segment. Take a quick break. NFL Week 1 Elite 8 next. With baseball playoffs right around the corner, over a month away, and the NFL and college football seasons right on our tail, it's the perfect time of year to get your daily fantasy sports life in order. For Frequency's sake has you covered every single week. Tune in to For Frequency Sake's DFS Deep Dive on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch every Friday evening. and uploaded every Saturday morning on your favorite podcast platform, where Brian and the boys will be giving you the best daily fantasy sports advice for each and every week to help you fatten your wallet this season. Again, on every Friday night live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch, and of course, uploaded on your favorite podcast platform on Saturday mornings. DFS advice, DFS deep dive here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. All right, this is what you really waited for. The NFL Elite Eight for week one. Teams that just missed the cut. The Rams was very fringe. Like, I waited until tonight after the Broncos game because I was really interested on where they would be. And after that, boy, they didn't even come close. I had way less 0-1 teams in here than I thought I would. I was wondering if there was going to be a way from, like, so, but here's the thing. 0-1 teams that would have been candidates were, like, the Rams. But compared to the teams that I have in front of them right now, they look 1,000 times worse. Then, because I didn't want to just have 8 teams that won and just sound like an absolute knob. Because that's not the case. But at the end of the day, like this, this is where I actually have it. Because like I couldn't put the Broncos on there, and I was planning on it. Like even if they lost, I was planning on putting them somewhere. Actually, no, I planned on them winning. But they, because like with the loss like that, I knew it was, if they lost, it was going to be something like what happened tonight. Like your 49ers. Thought about it, couldn't really put them, don't have as much faith in them right now as some of the, as the 8 teams I have listed. Bengals played like shit Sunday, so couldn't do it, that couldn't do that. That's about it. That teams that lost that I'd have faith at put, and then obviously the Rams, like I said, they just played too bad. So here we go. Number 8. We go from 8 to 1, by the way. Number 8, the Green Bay Packers. Here is why I'm saying do not jump off the wagon yet. Obviously, we saw last year the Matt LaFleur stuff. Colin Cowherd made an interesting point. He said we don't have proof that Matt LaFleur is an elite head coach. He inherited all of his good players. Interesting take. We'll put that in the back pocket for later. But I still think this team can win 11 games. I just don't think they're going to win as many as the Vikings. So, feeling good about those picks. We'll get to that team of purple that rocks the purple and white here in a little bit. So, Packers at 8. I think there's a really good chance that Packers minus the points lands on the Sinister 6, as much as I hate it, on Sunday. Because I feel like that they're going to come out confident and roll. And I feel like eventually you would think and hope that Rodgers can figure stuff out with the young receivers. Number 7, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I easily could have had them a spot higher. I also easily could have had them a spot lower because they didn't really impress. But some things that I took note of. Obviously, I said it last night. The Julio Jones resurgence, resurrection, that's the R word I was looking for, was phenomenal. Good for him. I've always been a Julio stan. I just wasn't expecting him to actually be worth anything this year. And that was, like, last night was a very pleasant surprise. Hope we can keep it up. Leonard Fournette being able to tote the rock as many times he did and as effectively as he did. Noteworthy. Offensive line wasn't good. So, throughout the year, like, in a couple weeks, they play the Chiefs. Week 4, I believe, who have some really good guys, especially on the interior, like Chris Jones. Packers have a couple really good guys on the defensive front. They play them in 2 weeks. They play the Saints next week, which the Saints own them. So a lot of people think that they were going to start, like, even if they won Sunday, 1-3. So it could very well go south quickly. But I saw, even not as much as other teams, I saw some stuff there that I was like, all right, I'm with it for the Bucks. Number 6, Blake Ringer's going to be happy. Philadelphia Eagles. I need to do more research on why the Lions came back and made that close, but their offense is taking strides. Jalen Hurts is taking some strides when it comes to managing and efficiency, which is stuff I like. It's going to take a lot for me to be really sold on Jalen, but I like the improvements. And regardless, again, I've said this, they can win 10 or 11 games even if Jalen Hurts is average, because they have good defense, they have good offensive line, they have good skill positions. Jalen is a really, really good runner, and they have a very feasible running game. And the way they were able to move the ball and control the game on both sides of the line on Sunday, very impressive. So they're Eagles at 6. Number 5, the Ravens. Not as impressive as we would have hoped. Like, we were all hoping that they would have went in on Sunday and won, like, 42-7. But it just wasn't on the cards. They're learning some stuff with some of these new receivers. I feel like there's a lot of stuff there that can be improved on. Their running game, they didn't have Dobbins Sunday, which was tough. Lamar had some flashes where it was like, oh, yeah, there's that guy. Sunday is a big, like, the winner of Sunday's game is going to be in the top 6 probably between them and Miami. Miami was a team that I could have put in here as well, but I need to see more of it, the consistency, before I really get on the hype train for them. But Sunday is a reckoning game for both of those teams early on for how good we think they can be. Number 4, oh yeah, Minnesota Vikings. All right, so right now I have the next two teams in a tier by themselves, a gap, the top two teams in a tier by themselves. So it goes top two teams, gap, gap, next two teams, gap, everyone else to an extent. Like, it's spread out in that everyone else, but that's how I feel. So these are unequivocally right now the 4 best teams in football for me. Number 4, the Minnesota Vikings. Again, I said this, offensively, they are going to schematically be able to dice teams up better than they ever have. Making teams go north, south, east, and west. They have the skill players to do it. Dalvin Cook's going to benefit from it. Kirk's going to benefit from it. Of course, Justin Jefferson will. Offensive line, which is good, not great, will benefit from it. And defensively, the thing that they have, I said Everson Griffin last night, I was wrong. I meant Danielle Hunter. When I talk about high-level edge rushers, him, Za'Darius Smith, other guys on that D-line, Eric Kendricks is one of the highest, like one of the better linebackers in the league. Harrison Smith is still a dog. Are they great at corner? No, but like they are able to, like they have guys on that defense that could still play and or that could play really well. And they have a front that if you get leads, then you can pin your ears back. And once they got like a 2-score lead on Sunday, they just blew so much shit up Green Bay ran. That was a really good sign for the Vikings. That Vikings-Eagles game next Monday night is going to be fantastic. Can't wait for it. Number 3, the Los Angeles Chargers. Go Chargers go, as the Schwarzenegger would say. Shout out to Arnold. So, would I have liked to see them put the Raiders, away more, you know, emphatically? Meh. A little bit. Would I have actually liked to see the Raiders hit that 2-pointer and then lose by 3 so I could have covered and went 4-1-1 on Sinister 6 this week? Yes. All in all, though, I'm really impressed with, like, early it was a little bit of a sluggish game. Defenses were playing well. And then all of a sudden, 10 and Powder Blue started saying, I'm going to fucking take over. And he just started, like, there I throwing dots. There, I said this today in the group chat. There is nothing better than in Monday after an NFL Sunday and watching the all-22 tight cam from the end zone of Justin Herbert throwing dimes. Oh, baby. It is second to nothing in this world. And noting the defense, much improvement, especially without all right, couple notes. First, defensively, didn't have J.C. Jackson. They were able to contain a lot of the weapons that weren't Davante Adams. Davante Adams is going to get his game off, especially with elite buddy ball compatriot Derek Carr. And that's a matter of fact. But they were able to still contain a lot of stuff. Hopefully they get J.C. Jackson back for the game Thursday. That game is going to be awesome. Primetime slate this week is really, really good, by the way. Even the Bears-Packers game Sunday night. It's going to be entertaining to watch because I'm a Bears fan. And a lot of people probably listen to this. Other Bears or Packers fans, so whoop-de-doo. But the Chargers, You look at their talent upgrades on defense. Again, hopefully you get J.C. Jackson back. Khalil Mack was dominant. Hope you can see more of that. Offensively, even when Keenan Allen went down, some of my bigger issues with the Chargers is their lack of, like, over-the-top at receiver. Herbert was just able to fit balls into ridiculous windows. Gerald Everett was really good. Palmer had a couple moments. Hopefully they get Mike Williams more involved. But, yeah, all around happy for the Chargers. Two gaps from them to the next team because, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, the next two teams are pretty darn good. Chiefs are really good, man. Yeah, I regret that underpick. I think that's what I did. Shouldn't have done that. They are fucking incredible. Kansas City Chiefs, under. What a dumbass. Schematically, they are just better than probably anybody in the league. And Mahomes is an alien. The thing that will worry me over the season is when they play competent teams. Because here's the thing. I praise the Chiefs like crazy, but man, the Cardinals stink. Like, are the Cardinals going to go 4-13 this year? It's possible, right? Not off the table. Chiefs, though, are great. They have guys that you, like, they just have speed. At the end of the day, they have enough speed to make you worry. I feel like teams are going to figure out eventually to try to put them in a box with some of their limitations that they have. Like, at the end of the day, they just don't have enough really good guys. They have guys that are capable, but they just don't have dudes that are good enough. This is the higher end of, like, a bad Patriots wide receiver room that Brady had. Because, obviously, you had Gronk, so you have Kelce in comparison. They have a plethora of backs like Edwards-Helaire, McKinnon, Ronald Jones, Pacheco. But then they just have these lower-end, middle-tier wide receivers that can get open and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes throughout the year. And defensively, I still think they have some weaknesses. But offensively, they're going to be really good because even regardless of their lack of talent at the skill position outside of Kelce, they have one of the best offensive lines in the league, and that's going to help a shit ton. And, of course, the Bills. The Bills. They're great. Josh Allen is a super freak. Their defense is all world class. If the Bills and Chiefs lined up today on a neutral field, I'd probably say like Bills -4, something like that, -3 maybe. But it is the Bills are going to play a lot of average competition this year, and they're going to blow their doors off. They play Tennessee on Monday, and if Tennessee looks as discombobulated as they did on Sunday against the Giants, it is going to be a freight train running through them on Monday night. But I also think I wouldn't be shocked if the Titans did cover because I think they have some stones on them. But we're going to find out because the Bills are a freight train and they're just loaded. So that is my NFL Elite Eight. Bills 1, Chiefs 2, Chargers 3, Vikings 4, Ravens 5, Eagles 6, Bucks 7, Packers 8. Today's episode is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island. All right, that'll do it. Thank you to everybody for listening. Shout out to Dougie G for being the dispensary of podcasts. We just throw him all of our content and he just puts it all, throws it out there and gives it to the world. So shout out to him. Check us back on Friday morning. We'll have the Sinister Six with Mac. A good weekend for both of us. And boy, oh boy, let me tell you, we are now at the point, we're figuring it out, where we are now at the point where we are getting a couple like really good games, but boy, we're also getting some really high level bets, and boy, oh boy, are the games that they involve doozies. It is high level stuff, let me tell you. Like, we are debating whether to put Kansas or UTSA in the Sinister Six right now. And boy, is it great, because that is the beauty of gambling, folks. But that will be Friday. We'll record it Thursday night after the TNF game. Can't wait to react to that, Chiefs and Chargers. Not going to pick that game, but I think it'll be really, really good. So I'm excited for it on Thursday night. Until then, as always, thank you very much for listening. As always, remember, if you don't have the game, if you ain't got the game, you better pass the sticks. This is the Educated Ignorance Podcast. We will see you next time on Friday. Until then, we are out. Peace.